So, last time we finished reading Revelation chapter 7 all the way up to 17, and we began reviewing about the 144,000, who they were, that the 144,000 are actual literal Israelites. They're not representative of the Gentiles, quote unquote, the church. And that whole concept is wrong, as the church is separate from the Israelites. The saved Israelites is wrong. The Israel of Elohim is part of the congregation of Elohim. The congregation of Elohim consists of all nations who have redeemed their lives, whose lives were redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. But these 144,000 are indeed Israelites. They're not Gentiles. That's why there's the distinction made, as we saw, like in verse 1 of chapter 7. It says, actually, verse 3 says, "Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our Elohim in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel." So he gave us first the total and said specifically, this is the total of servants from the tribe of Israel. And then it goes from verse 5 through 8 to itemize all the tribes involved. And of course, Dan was not listed there, as mentioned the last time. So these are Israelites. Isn't any group, any church, Gentile group, organization that's trying to say, "Oh, this represents us, and if you want to be saved, if you want to be a part of 144,000, you have to join our group." It's not right. It's not true. This represents Israelites. That's why in verse 9, we have the distinction made. After this, it says, "I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could count, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, and stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands." So it's very clear. Why do you think he is the Spirit moved the writer to say, "of all nations"? Wouldn't that have been enough? But he says, "and kindreds and peoples and tongues." He's making it very plain that these are two different groups. Okay, they're two different groups. The first, the 140,000, and again, the 140,000 does not represent the only Israelites to be saved. That's not what this is about. The 144,000 represent 144 Israelites specifically selected for a particular job. There are other Israelites that are being saved, but here, these are the servants. They're not just the regular members. These are servants. And it might sound odd, but there is a distinction made between the servants or the saints of Elohim and the general congregation. We see that, of course, in Israel. There were the Levites. The Levites and the prophets were called the servants in general. The general public were called the people or the congregation of Elohim. And if he called any one of them out for a specific mission, then they were recognized as his servant. But everyone else in general, you're just his people. You've entered the covenant. You're going to live right. You will do his will. He will be your Elohim. You will be his people, the general group. But then there are the servants. In the time of Israel was the Levites and the prophets. So likewise in here, these are Israelites being selected for a specific purpose, while the other Israelites who will be saved are not a part of that number. And again, 9 shows the general, the great multitude. It cannot be numbered, while the number of the Israelites could be numbered. It's from all nations, while the 144,000 are from a specific nation. So let's move on from there. And we saw, it says in verse, I wanted to do a little bit about the tribulation, where it says that. Verse 14, "And I said unto him, Sir," verse 13, "And one of the elders answered, saying to me, What are these which are arrayed in white robes, and where do they come from? And John said unto him, Sir, you know." And he said to me, that is the elder said, these are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That's who these are. And who are these? I believe it's all of them. The these here is not just the great multitude, but it's inclusive of the 144,000 and the great multitude. It's these. They have all washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. And but where do they come from? They came out of great tribulation. We saw last Sabbath, we talked about Matthew chapter 24, when the Master says there'll be great tribulation in those days. And I pointed out that that great tribulation that's spoken here and that's spoken of in Matthew 24 has already occurred. And this is something all the early believers believed. All the early congregation elders all believe that the great tribulation had already passed when the temple was destroyed. One commentator said, except Irenaeus, and it's a good thing that Elohim says prove all things, because I disagree with what he says concerning Irenaeus. Irenaeus did not believe differently. Irenaeus believed the same thing. He believed that at the destruction of the second temple, is when that during that event, that's the great tribulation, everything that led up to it, all the way past it, the destruction of Jerusalem, that made the land what? Desolate, empty. That's what it means, desolation. And that's the only time the land of Israel was completely desolated like that, to that degree. Not in the Maccabees. The Maccabees, the Jews were still there. And so people take the abomination of desolation and try to say it happened in the time of the Maccabees. No, because the Master Yeshua was after that event. Messiah was after the Maccabees. And he told the disciples, look out for the abomination that Daniel spoke of. If it had happened already, he would have referred to the Maccabees, but he didn't. He says, look to the one Daniel spoke, because when you look at the account of Daniel, it's not speaking about that. People are just taking a, you know, putting it out of context. And no, it's what happened in Jerusalem, quote unquote, 70 AD. By the way, these dates are scholarly dates. I don't necessarily subscribe to them. Okay. And a matter of fact, this is one of the reasons Irenaeus is one of the reasons, I should say, is an example of that. In Irenaeus's Against Heresies, book 5, chapter 25, in, let's see, paragraph 2, he says, moreover, I'm just reading to you an excerpt because this has to do with the what he believed about the destruction. Moreover, he, the apostle, has also pointed out this, which I have shown in many ways, that the temple in Jerusalem was made by the direction of the true Elohim. Stop here. And okay, let me read it and I'll explain, because it gets a little, you have to pay attention. For the apostle himself, speaking of his own person, distinctly called it the temple of Elohim. What apostle? Paul. It might be John or Paul. But now I have shown in the third book that no one is termed Elohim by the apostles when speaking for themselves except him who truly is Elohim, the Father of our Sovereign, by whose directions the temple which is at Jerusalem was constructed for those purposes which I have already mentioned, in which temple the enemy shall sit, endeavoring to show himself as Messiah, as the Sovereign also declares. But when ye shall see the abomination of desolation, which has been spoken of by the prophet Daniel, see, not fulfilled, but spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand. So whoever put that comment there says, we may make sure we understand what's being said. Then let those who are in Judea flee into the mountains. Do we really think Jerusalem is going to go through another of these? No, it happened already. But let's go back to the first part of this paragraph. Because I'm doing two things. I'm showing you why you can't trust the scholarly interpretations, why you must prove it yourself, and also why that the destruction of Jerusalem after Messiah ascended was the great tribulation. So he says, he also pointed out this, which I have shown in many ways, that the temple in Jerusalem, not the temple which was in Jerusalem. Why do I say that? Because scholars teach that Irenaeus is writing this after the temple was destroyed. That's a scholarly conclusion. It's not textually correct. So that's why when you're reading what the scholars say, because they have their own bent, and I see that a lot, and they'll say part of the information and not tell you the whole thing. What Irenaeus said is that the temple in Jerusalem, present in his present time, the temple was still standing. So don't worry about the dates that scholars set to tell you, Irenaeus was around 69 AD to some other point, I think 100, some something. No, it's error. That's why you have to go like the Bereans and check all things, because that's not what Irenaeus said. Irenaeus said that the temple in Jerusalem was made by the direction of the true Elohim. There's only one temple that was made in by the direction of Elohim. He said the temple that is in Jerusalem, distinctly called it the temple of Elohim. So we know when the apostles wrote there, that was the only temple there. So Irenaeus is speaking of the temple in Jerusalem. And by his writing, it implies that the temple was not yet destroyed when he was writing this. I'll read it for you again. Moreover, he, the apostle, has also pointed out this, which I have shown in many ways, that the temple in Jerusalem, the temple in Jerusalem was made by the direction of the true Elohim. And he makes his case and said, none of the apostles, that no one is termed Elohim by the apostle except the true one. So he's saying the temple that he is talking about here is a temple that's existing, because he says the temple in Jerusalem. Remember, this is a message he's writing. And he's saying the temple that is in Jerusalem. Let's see. So he's basically saying that temple, it implies that the temple was still standing. In other words, Irenaeus was alive when the temple was still standing, by whose direction the temple, which is at Jerusalem, was constructed for those purposes which I had already mentioned. So he's saying that temple that was directed to be built by the true Elohim in Jerusalem is that same temple, let's see, was constructed for those purposes which I have already mentioned, in which the enemy shall sit. Okay, so that's why we need to read carefully and not believe what scholars say about the teachers. They're so wrong in so many things. So they isolated Irenaeus as the only bishop who taught differently. Basically, they said all the bishops taught that the tribulation happened when the temple, with the destruction of Jerusalem, which included the destruction of the temple. They said all of it. One scholar said all except Irenaeus. But when you read Irenaeus' teaching, you see that's not what is. I'm quoting from Irenaeus' teaching, that he says it's the same temple that Elohim commanded to be built, not will be built. Some like actually twist his words to say, oh, he is saying this temple will be built. No. It says the temple that is in Jerusalem, the temple that was commanded by the sovereign to be built, is the one the enemy shall sit in. Who is the enemy? The one who would destroy the temple, as recorded in the book of Daniel for us. But when ye shall see the abomination of desolation, which has been spoken by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand, then let those who are in Judea flee into the mountains. And he who is upon the housetop, let him not come down to take anything out of his house. For there shall be great tribulation or hardship, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall be. That's Matthew 24, verses 15, and Matthew 24, verse 21. Okay, so Daniel's comment about the desolation was regarding that time, not the time of the Maccabees. It doesn't make sense, because in the time of the Maccabees, Israel was not, the land of Jerusalem, the land of Israel, was not desolated. There were plenty of Jews there. They were, some of them became apostate, but many were faithful and gave their lives boldly, even though afterwards some of them became corrupt. But what am I saying? All the ancient bishops believed and taught that the destruction of Jerusalem was that great tribulation. So when we see here, that says, verse 14, and I said unto him, Sir, thou knowest, and he said unto me, These are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That language in the scriptures by the apostles is used specifically to tie in with what Messiah said, because the sovereign is not an author of confusion, nor his true apostles and prophets. So they're using language so people can tie it in together. Not washed by the blood of bulls and goats, but by the blood of the Lamb. Not temple worship, not a temple cult invented by apostate, by people who lived in the land who became apostate and created another religion. I'm not going to name religions, but that religion is not the biblical faith. It's another faith with the Star of Rampham and all the practices that go along with that when you abandon Elohim for what's not true. So another thing about this tribulation, I'll read to you a little bit. It's not all of it. It's very rough. And as far as the enemy, when we get there in those portions of the book of Revelations, we'll talk about more. So we're not going to talk about who the enemy was, I should say. But that enemy came a long time ago too, because that enemy is the one who destroyed the temple. But remember the teaching, to the Jew first, tribulation and blessing, then to the Gentile, tribulation and blessing. So the all nations, it just can't be Rome alone. Rome was burnt down too. Rome was burnt down many, many years ago for its sins. But Rome is not the only sinner. And the power of Rome continues, affects the whole world. It says it causes them to drink the mixture. So the effects of Rome is all over the world. And so all the world will to one degree or another have tribulation. Of course. Just think about World War I. What happened in Europe. For them, that was a tribulation. World War II, Japan, and all the lands affected, that was tribulation. Oh, America. I'm hoping the time never comes for America. I'm hoping America will repent. But just as Yeshua said, when you see these things, flee. We're not just to be sitting ducks. We have to be actively saying, we have to understand, when a nation become apostate, Elohim's judgment will come. But again, I was speaking about this actually with my daughter yesterday, because she asked me about what's going to happen to America. So I really don't know, but just like Elohim was willing to spare Sodom and Gomorrah for a small amount of people, despite their great sins, he says he will not destroy them if he finds how many, 5 or 10? I don't remember. 10. Thank you, Cherie. 10. If he found 10, he'll not. So America we're thankful, is still full of people that are of faith. I'm hoping. But when that day comes, when America become apostate, its time will come like so many others that have passed in the past. So they wash their robes in the blood of the Lamb, not in the blood of the Passover Lamb, not in the blood of any particular Lamb, but in of any physical Lamb, I should say, but in the one Lamb of Elohim. Notice, the scriptures never refer to Elohim as the Lamb, the Passover Lamb, as some do. All that is undermining his name. His name is greater than that. His sacrifice encompassed all lambs. And that's an understatement, because the lambs that were being offered are just in memory or in memorial, in commemoration of his death that would come. And once he came and he died, so that all, whether Israelite or from any nation, could have their lives washed in his blood, can be saved. After the temple was destroyed, there's no sacrificial system. It wasn't done outside of Elohim's will. It was done by Elohim's will. It's by Elohim's will the temple was destroyed, that Jerusalem was destroyed. There were so much schisms and evil going on at that time of Jerusalem. That's why Yeshua wept over Jerusalem, Jerusalem. How often would I gather you unto me as a hen gathers her brood, but you would not. And he wept over Jerusalem. And then when he saw, when his time was coming near, he did something interesting. I fully don't understand it. But he did something interesting recorded in the book of Matthew and also Jeremiah. Jeremiah speaks of it. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 13. If you read that, you will see about the fig tree and the destruction in Jeremiah 8. And Messiah went to the fig tree. And the scripture, the spirit moved the writer to say it was not time. So why would Yeshua do that? Why would he curse the fig tree when it was not time? Do you notice that? Because, you know, now had the writer said, and it was the time for the fig trees to bear figs, and that particular tree had no fig, and he did that, then it would be clear. But in Matthew 21, verses 19 to 20, he went to the fig tree and found none. And it wasn't the time. And he cursed it, and immediately it withered. Believe me. I don't understand how, but that was symbolic to what was going on to Jerusalem. I don't understand the timing, but somehow Jerusalem did not know its time, the time of his visit. You did not know their time. So there's a connection between them not knowing the time of their visit and when Yeshua went to the fig tree and cursed it because there were no figs on there and it was not the time. So he cursed and withered. And so Jerusalem, not many days, years later, was destroyed and made desolate. Just like the prophet Daniel had prescribed. Let me just see how much time I have here. Okay, so I'm going to just end with this portion. And there, verse 15, and therefore are they before the throne of Elohim, serving him day and night in his temple. He that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. And they shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb, which is in the midst of the throne, shall feed them and shall lead them into living fountains of waters. And Elohim shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. And so we end here. But the Lamb is in the midst of the throne. He doesn't have a separate throne. The same throne that his Father sits in is the same throne he sits in the middle of the throne. Next to the Father. Which throne is what? The heavens. That's his throne. That's where the kingdom reigns. That King Nebuchadnezzar, as Daniel said, may know that the kingdom of Elohim, the kingdom of the heavens reign, not the kingdom of human beings. So much more to say, but I stop here. Thank you for listening.